Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we always welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we're trying to get with us on the line Pastor David Whitney, and we're going to be talking about what separates America from all other countries in the world, and that is our Constitution. You know, one time that our people, our children, were required to learn the Constitution in school. At one time, our lawyers read the Constitution and understood this wonderful system of checks and balances, not simply within the executive, judicial, and legislative branches, but between the federal and the state governments. In fact, that was the very secret of the essence of our freedom. It was a concept of limitation of the power of government, because our founding fathers did not trust men with power. They knew, as Lord Acton had said so well, that absolute power corrupts absolutely. Or, as the WAG had said, absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone. And the whole idea is that if you give men power, it will be misused. As has been said so often, no man's purse or property are safe when the legislature is in session. That came from Will Rogers. My favorite one is the remark by Congressman Ron Powell that the day that the Congress of the United States does the most good for the American citizens is the day of the Republican-Democrat baseball game. When all the congressmen are out at the baseball field cheering for their team, and, of course, Congress is not in session. So, with that as the background, we're going to be discussing, well, the writing of the Constitution and why they used the words they did to establish this very unique form of government that once made the United States the envy of the entire world. David, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Dr. Stan, thank you for having me on the program. You know, James Madison, the father, often called the father of our Constitution, said every word of the Constitution decides a question between power and liberty. And that's why here at Institute on the Constitution, we teach in detail the Constitution. We want to give people a working knowledge of the Constitution so they will be able to understand what the intent of the founders was in terms of each word. Well, the preamble is very short to the Constitution, and there's a reason for that. That short preamble is because really the Declaration of Independence is the preamble that sets forth the purposes for government, sets forth the philosophy of government based upon the laws of nature and nature's God. But the preamble of the Constitution just simply begins, "We the people," which shows that government is by consent of the governed. That is, we enter into a covenant with our civil government. There's a contract that we are engaged with, that both parties of the contract have duties and responsibilities, and also both parts of the contract can hold the other accountable and must hold the other accountable to fulfill their side of the contract.
Well, you're absolutely right, and we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union. Pick it up from there, David.
Well, to form a more perfect union would end the disunity that was rampant under the Articles of Confederation, and that was the purpose that the Constitutional Convention actually met for, to see if they could improve upon, and they discovered that the best improvement would be to create a new constitution instead of continuing under the Articles of Confederation.
All right, I just told to hold that thought here for just a moment, and then we'll be right back with David Whitney, Pastor David Whitney, from the Institute on the Constitution. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney. David, you were talking about, we were beginning to go through the beginning of this preamble to the Constitution, and this idea of forming a perfect, more perfect union was then to overcome the deficiencies of the Articles of Confederation. Is that correct?
That's correct. And the second purpose, in addition to forming a more perfect union, was to establish justice. And we might just take that for granted, but we shouldn't, especially in this day when many people claim that there is no absolute fixed standard of justice. Not according to our founding fathers. They knew a fixed standard of justice, and they were seeking to establish that standard in this union. The third purpose was to ensure domestic tranquility. They had experienced Shays Rebellion during the time of the Articles of Confederation and found that the tools available to them were really inadequate to suppress those sort of rebellions. And the fourth purpose was to provide for the common defense. Now, the framers had difficulty under the Articles of Confederation raising the funds necessary to pay for the war for independence. We remember the terrible winter at Valley Forge when the troops were completely inadequately clothed and housed, and all of that was due to the fact that the only power that the federal government had under the Articles of Confederation to raise funds to pay for the war was basically to make requisitions, make a request of the state. You know, if you would please, the state of Maryland or the state of Pennsylvania, would you please send us money? And therefore, there was a great debt that was owed at the end of the War of Independence because of inadequate funding. The fifth reason was to promote the general welfare. And this is a very important phrase, Dr. Stan, because many people have misunderstood this idea. It was not the specific welfare of any individual or any group or any socioeconomic segment of the society. It was only for the general welfare. We'll talk about that in a few moments when we look at that phrase in Article 1. The sixth reason was to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. And this shows that they had a fundamental concern for liberty, and that they intended this Constitution to really be a permanent document. It was not going to be a living, breathing, ever-changing document that in one generation meant something entirely different than in the next generation. It was a fixed standard that not only for themselves, but for all succeeding generations would remain the same. In other words, they intended that we would interpret this Constitution according to their intention.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution, and talking about the preamble of the United States. And the first thing, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, established justice. And Pastor Whitney was pointing out how important it was to have a system of justice in case of rebellion, is that experience with Shays' Rebellion, to provide for the common defense, certainly to be able to defend the country, and to be able to raise the funds to do that, to promote the general welfare. And he differs on the wording of provide for the general provide for the common defense from promoting the general welfare, for it was never to be the function of the federal government to provide for the individual, but just to create a situation that where people could live together freely and prosper, but never to provide for the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, to secure the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our posterity. So pick up the story from there, David.
And along that lines of for ourselves and our posterity, they were not speaking only of children that had been born at that point in time. They were speaking of future generations yet unborn, yet unconceived. And so from this we may imply that our founders intended a protection of unborn children. Although they did not state this explicitly, it is implicit in their wording here that the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity would include the protection of the life of unborn generations, and that includes generations in the womb, which means the Roe v. Wade decision of the Supreme Court is unconstitutional if you look at the intent of our founding fathers. And then they close the preamble with, we do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Again, here demonstrating the covenantal or the contractual nature of governmental authority. And I think it's very important for people to realize that if you enter into any contract, say you contract to purchase a car and so many payments over so many months and so forth and so on, there's stipulations. If you violate your side of the contract, you don't make the payments on time, well, the remedy for the one selling you the car is that they can come and repossess the car and so on. And likewise, if the other party, the one selling you the car, somehow tries to violate their side of the contract, they suddenly decide to raise the interest rate on you without any warning, you have also protection that you could take them to court and say, here's the contract, here's the wording of the contract. They did not fulfill their side of the contract. Most Americans don't realize that our contract, this Constitution, implies that they, the citizens, must know this contract in order to hold their elected officials accountable, who are on the other side of the contract. And when elected officials violate their side of the contract and break the Constitution and violate the Constitution as being done every single day in the life of our nation, we, the people who entered this contract with them, we need to hold them accountable. And we need to put them out of office, because if they violate the Constitution of the United States as intended by our founding fathers, the only remedy we have is to fire them from their jobs, to put them out of office, and only put people into place who will truly follow the intent of the founding fathers. So that's why we here at Institute on the Constitution are so passionate about teaching Americans the Constitution. As you mentioned earlier, in previous generations, this was all done in school. Everybody, by the time they reached adulthood, understood the Constitution, had studied it, understood what the founding fathers intended. But our public school system today is purposely, I believe, not doing that, because they don't want the American people to know that we have a bunch of lawbreakers in office who have violated the Constitution again and again.
Let me just point out that the new federal system, the No Child Left Behind system, has a textbook which they're circulating for $10. You can get it for $10. Now, most textbooks cost $30 or $40, cost the state that much. They put this out for $10 because they want the teachers to use it. And what it does is completely distort and undermine the teaching of the Constitution. It leaves out the important things within the Constitution, degrades the Bill of Rights, and tells us the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is far better. This is the agenda of the people in Washington, D.C. today, because their loyalty is not to the United States and to our Constitution, which they've sworn to uphold, but to this globalist dream of the New World Order and the New World Religion. And I just want to comment that they're holding up in the Spokane area a new Institute of the Constitution course. And if any of you out there in the listening audience would like to attend that on Thursday evening, why, give us a call here at Radio Liberty at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And we'll track down the people who are doing that program and put you in touch with them. But it's important, if you've never taken one of these courses, you take the course, you get in touch with the people who are doing this, that you learn the Constitution, that you go to the course over and over again until you can quote this as well as any teacher, and then, of course, you can begin to teach others. To understand, the Constitution was to put chains on the legislators and on the judges and on the executive branch so the people could be free. Well, unfortunately, we've unshackled the government, and now they're forcing the chains for the people. Mm-hmm. And this is what our founding fathers feared. This is why David does what he does and I do what I do, to try to educate you, because if we don't get back to the fundamentals of our Constitution and return to the concept that our freedoms come from God, then we will surely lose them. So pick up the story from there, David.
Then stepping into the first article, and it'd be helpful for people just to remember the first three articles, if you're looking for what section to look in, they're easy to remember, because the very first article deals with the legislature, second article with the executive branch, and the third article, the judiciary. So legislative, executive, judiciary, there's the outline of the first three articles. So the first article establishes a bicameral, that is two houses of Congress, the House of Representatives and the Senate. Now, the House of Representatives is popularly elected because they are representing their people by district. However, the Senate was, by design, not to be popularly elected, but be chosen by the state legislatures. And this function was in order that the state legislatures would have a check on the power of the federal government. You see, as it was designed, and of course, there's a number of violations taking place today, but as it was designed, the federal government could never directly tax individual citizens, as we do today with the income tax. Instead, they would send a tax bill to the state. So say they would send one to the state of Maryland. Then the state of Maryland would decide how it, as the state of Maryland, was going to raise that tax from its people, whether by sales tax or whatever choice they made, it was up to the state to collect the tax, which meant the people had a very direct accountability with their state legislature. And, you know, and the state legislature, because it was going to have to tax its people, it had a direct say in what the federal government was doing through the Senate. And if they didn't like what their senator did, they could fire him on the spot and replace him with another appointee. The Senate, the U.S. Senate, was really in the control of each of the state legislatures. That was up until 1915, when the 17th Amendment abolished that practice and further destroyed the design of our founding fathers.
And I really think it's so important that people understand the magnificent idea of the indirect election of senators. Why? So you would have the states be able to counter or check the power of the central government. It was part of this idea of checks and balances, not simply within the federal government, but between the federal government and the states. And the senators represented the states, and they would then keep the federal government from becoming too powerful. Well, the wicked people who wanted a dictatorship in America, and there were people even at that time, among them Colonel House and Woodrow Wilson and the forces that they represent, they actually wanted this 17th Amendment, so we would have this direct election of senators, so they, the elite, would be able to buy the votes of the senators. And now if you're going to become a senator, it costs you millions of dollars to run. Where do you think they get that money from? Why they get it from the major corporations, the people who want to be able to control the senators. Then don't think for one minute that somebody gives a large sums of money to the senators, and they always have means of doing it. They have all sorts of laws, but they know how to get around these laws. They're soft money laws. They always know how to come up with the money. And that's why we have the finest politicians in Washington, D.C. today than money could buy. So pick up the story.
Yes, just to mention an example of this, states are groaning under unfunded federal mandates. In other words, the federal government says, you will do thus and so and thus and so, and we're not going to give you any money to do it. You just have to do it. And, you know, this would never happen if the Senate was under the control of the legislature as designed by our founding fathers, wisely designed. Well, the reason they designed two houses is because it was important for them to cool hothead legislation and provide additional time for reflection. And senators, because they were chosen differently and they also served staggered six-year terms, there would be an entirely different flavor to the Senate than there was to the House. And so in a sense, the design was very wise because it prevented things from going through. Legislation was very difficult to accomplish, and only the good pieces of legislation would make it all the way through the process. Now, the possibility that a bicameral legislature could thwart the will of the majority of people was talked about by our founding fathers, and yes, the framers thought sometimes it should thwart the will of the people, because they also not only distrusted individuals in power, they distrusted the popular majorities. In other words, they spoke a great deal about the danger of a mobocracy, and the whole idea, as we've already mentioned, of a democracy was anathema to them. They did not want such a thing. And so, yes, if the legislature thwarted the will of the majority of the people at times, that would be a good thing. We need to remember that a republic is a very different form of government than a democracy. It is an indirect form of government through representatives, and in a republic, the law is supreme. Not 51% of the people or 51% of the people who happen to vote, but the law is supreme and it cannot be violated by anyone, and the minority of people in any state or nation then have rights which even the majority of people may not violate.
And of course, I think it's so important to understand that in our system, and the founding fathers understood this, the ultimate law was the law of God according
That's
to the
right.
Bible, and all of our laws were based upon that. They were based upon the Ten Commandments. They were based upon the idea that men were not supreme, that men were answerable to somebody above them. Well, who are our leaders answerable today? Well, we'll be back in just a moment here with Pastor David Whitney here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. And we're talking about, of course, the various stipulations within the Constitution. And we were getting to the first of the three articles. The first three articles, the first deals with the legislative, the second with the executive, the third with the judicial. There are only seven articles to the Constitution. So now you know what the first three are all about. So let's pick up Article 1 of the Constitution. Constitution, David.
Okay, we looked at Article 1, Section 1. Section 2 through 6 of Article 1 provide for the composition of the House and the Senate and establish the authority of each to determine its own procedures as well as its own discipline. And Section 6 particularly ensures that congressmen will be free to discuss all matters, protecting them from being sued for what they might say on the floor of Congress, and also preserving the separation of powers by providing that no congressman may simultaneously hold another federal office. That would be obviously a conflict of interest. Then Section 7 of Article 1 speaks of the legislative process, that all revenue bills originate in the House. That is, the people are the one who decide how the money is going to be spent. Then, of course, the Senate must concur with that. Legislation would always start in Congress. The president was only to suggest legislation, never to do what is done today, basically handing down by edict, this is what I want passed, and this is exactly, the framing of the legislation I want you senators and congressmen to put through. That was completely against the design of our founding fathers. The president's function was that he could veto a bill. Again, it would be vetoing the whole bill. No line item veto was ever implied in what they wrote here. And then Congress, of course, could override the president's veto if there was a two-third vote in the House as well as in the Senate. And then Section 8, and this is a particularly important section, Dr. Stan, for people to understand. Article 1, Section 8 speaks of the fact that Congress may only, and we ought to underline only, tax and spend for three specific purposes. First, the payment of debts. By the time the Constitution was being formed, the United States had already incurred a number of debts, and they were saying, we are going to honor those debts, unlike other governments that formed that would just say, we're not going to honor any of the debts of the former government. We're just basically going to ignore that. They said, we will honor debts, pay the payment of debts. The second thing that Congress could tax and spend for is the common defense. We're talking here about Army and Navy and so forth. And the third is general welfare. And again, general welfare means it was providing, as you said, it was not to provide for the general welfare, but to promote the general welfare. Not welfare as we commonly think of it today as handing a check to some poor person. The general welfare implies that government may not tax and spend for the specific welfare of individuals. If it could, I would go to my congressman today and say, I have an excellent bill that I would propose that you submit, and that is that you would form a fund for the favorite charity of mine, David Whitney. And let's make it $10 million. And I'm going to take that $10 million and I'll buy houses and I'll buy boats and I'll buy cars. And I'll be doing all sorts of things that stimulate the economy and give people jobs. So, this is an excellent idea. Why wouldn't people laugh at me and say, that's ridiculous, David. Of course they wouldn't do that. And yet every time our Congress spends something for a welfare program, whatever form, they're basically doing that. And that is completely in violation of Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution.
Okay, well, let's just hold that because we're going to bring our rest of our stations back on here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution, and we're talking about the first article of the Constitution, and of course the most important part of seven parts of that really are more or less administrative, how the legislature is going to be appointed. But when you get to Section 8 of Article 1, this, of course, is key because it stipulates at the very beginning that this is going to have to do with making a military and then, of course, providing for the military and the general welfare. But the general welfare really is all the things that they list beneath that. And they're actually listing things like having a stable monetary system and having a military and having laws for the sea, certainly that. So the general welfare they're talking about is not the welfare of the individual. the idea that the federal government should provide for the people was an anathema to our founding fathers. They believed that the welfare should be taken care of at the state and the local level. And you go and you read the Federalist Papers, they make that very clear that matters dealing with life, liberty, and property are to be limited to the states, never to be the function of the federal government. Why? Because they knew that any government that could provide whatever the people need would have to be able to take whatever they had, and they did not want an imperial government like they had with Great Britain, where the federal government, the central government, the king could come in and take away from people. So the whole idea of welfare, nobody was going to starve. They'd be taken care of at the local level. But that was the function of the local level, first the family, then the church, and then the local community. And, of course, they had welfare problems even back then. And I remember Benjamin Franklin saying so well, don't give the people too much. Of course, they become totally dependent on the society. So the whole idea was to limit the power of the federal government. And pick that idea, David.
This whole concept of what we commonly think of as government welfare today was foreign to our founding fathers and against their purposes, and the destruction of our founding fathers' vision for us through the Constitution has been a long time in coming. But one significant case was Stewart Machine Company v. Davis in 1927. In this decision and subsequent decisions, the Supreme Court held that Congress may tax some groups and subsidize other groups because the subsidized groups will spend more money and thus they'll stimulate the general welfare. And this decision basically eliminated the distinction between general welfare and specific welfare, and that has led us to the disastrous situation we have today, vastly expanding federal power in the opposite direction of what our founding fathers designed.
But that is because you had wicked people on the courts, yeah, who did not believe in these constitutional concepts that they had sworn to uphold, and they were intent upon expanding the power of the federal government. What year was that?
1927.
Okay, but and certainly by then, the socialists, the fascists, were already putting their people onto our Supreme Court to begin to expand the power of the federal government. People don't understand that. But little by little, they have eroded our freedom, and it didn't happen by accident. And it didn't happen because we have a living document that can be changed at any time. It happened because you had people who had a different agenda. They knew the American people would not go along with the all-powerful federal government, so they couldn't amend the Constitution, so they put wicked people onto the courts to accomplish what they could not accomplish by the process of amendment.
Mm-hmm. Well, then the Section 8 also talks about the power of Congress to borrow money and to regulate commerce with foreign nations, regulate commerce with tribes, and regulate commerce between the states, and not within the state. What is called intrastate commerce was never to be regulated by the federal government. Only interstate, that is, between states, was to be regulated. Well, this all began to change as well in the last century, the 20th century. Decision in 1918, Hammer v. Dangerhardt, and a decision 20 years later, Carter v. Carter-Cole. And these it was decided by the Supreme Court that Congress can regulate what's going on within a state. One example I remember hearing was just ridiculous. A farmer raised a lot of wheat and decided that instead of selling a bunch of his wheat to the grain elevator, he was going to feed the wheat to his own hogs on his own property. Well, this, of course, has nothing to do with commerce between one state and another. It's this man using what he raised on his own property to feed his own hogs. And yet he was sued, and successfully sued. It went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled that, well, if you had sold your grain to the grain elevator, then it would have affected interstate commerce, and therefore we can tell a farmer what he must do with the grain that he raises on his own property and whether he can feed it to his hogs or whether he can dump it in the trash can. Just complete expansion of federal power, completely contrary to what our federal government was designed to be and what the Constitution limits them to be.
But of course, this was under the time of the Roosevelt administration,
yes,
wasn't it? And of course, by then, the socialists who wanted a fascist society were in complete control of the executive branch of government. We'll be right back here with Pastor David Whitney. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney, and of course we're talking about the situation as it exists, with the development of these ideas of our Constitution, and we're talking about Section 8 of Article 1, because this is the key. It lists, I believe, 18 different things Congress can do, and those are the powers that are given to Congress. Other than that, they are not to have any other power, and that's why they added the 10th Amendment to the Constitution, saying all powers not specifically here granted to Congress by the Constitution are to be limited by it to the states and to the people, respectively. In other words, Congress had only a very, very few things it could do, and they were all laid out in Article 8 of Section 1. That's why it's so important people know what those 18 points are. So pick up the story there, David.
And by the way, for that reason, because Congress had so little that they could do, Congress was a part-time job in the original formation. They wouldn't be in Washington, D.C. all year long. They'd only be there for several months, and then they'd go home to their home states, and they'd come back the following year.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could do that all across America? You know, in Kentucky, they still do. They meet for a couple of months out of the year, and they only meet every other year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think of all the money we could save if the legislature weren't in session so much of the time.
That's right. Well, the fourth power given to Congress is to make rules for naturalization and rules for bankruptcy. The fifth is to coin money and regulate money. And here again, constitutional money, my friends, is gold and silver, not this fiat paper currency that we have, Federal Reserve notes. That's unconstitutional money. The seventh power, or the sixth power, is to punish counterfeiting. The seventh, to establish post office and post office roads. The eighth, to establish rules for copyrights and patents. The ninth, to establish federal courts below the Supreme Court. In other words, the Supreme Court is the only court that has to exist on the federal level. All the lower courts, all the lower circuit federal courts, they could be added to or subtracted from or even abolished altogether. They are completely in the control of the Congress. And the tenth power is to define and punish piracies and felonies on the high seas according to the law of nations, which is basically the law of God as it applies in relationships between nations. The 11th power is to declare war. That is, only Congress could declare war. The Supreme Court could not declare war. The President could not declare war. And yet today, every war since 1942, every war since World War II, has been an unconstitutional war. That is, they have not declared war as the way the Constitution demands it be done, that is, Congress declare. Instead, the President has issued some sort of order, and we've gone to war. The 12th power is to raise and support armies. And there was a
hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Pastor David Whitney, and we're going through the 18 points in Section 8 of Article 1 of the Constitution. You need to get a constitution. You need to read it. You need to understand that there are three articles. The first is legislative. The second, executive. The third, judicial. And under the first article, one, there are, I think, 10 or 11 sections. How many sections are there, David?
Article 1 has 10 sections.
10 sections. And of course, the most important is Section 8, and we're going through that. And certainly it stipulates very specifically what Congress can do. Well, we've got a couple of callers, and let's sip the... but I'll ask other people not to call in because I really want Pastor Whitney to be able to get through this. Roger, do you have a quick question?
Yes, please. I'll try to be as quick as possible. It's one of the very rare times I've been conflicted about the extent of federal power, and that just recently, in particular with the supposed need for a federal marriage amendment, because of the full faith and credit clause, I believe.
All right, fine. Let's get Pastor Whitney's. How do you feel about the
very strongly against the federal marriage amendment? And not that I am against the God ordained institution of marriage, but that the God ordained institution of marriage is never to be in the hands of the government. This was a mistake made following the war between the states when states began to issue marriage licenses. In other words, you had to go to the state to get permission to be married. Our founding fathers, George Washington, he never got a marriage license. And it drifted from that point. Then in the 30s, 1930s, the federal government made laws regarding divorce. And they wanted to standardize the divorce laws across. Again, divorce is not the business of the government, nor is marriage the business of the government. It is the business of the family and the church. And here's a violation of the God-ordained jurisdiction given to family government, church government, and civil government. Civil government, in this case, has violated those jurisdictions, and it has no business in this at all. And it should be taken out of the hands of both state and federal and put back where it belongs, in the hands of church and family.
All right, fine. Thank you. And let's go to Richard. Richard, a quick question.
Well, I have a comment, Dr. Stan.
Okay, go ahead.
Dr. Stan, I think something very, and Pastor Winnie, I think something very important everybody needs to understand is that the Constitution was written under common law, and we are no longer under common law. We are under statutory corporate law.
You're absolutely right.
You're right.
Need to get back to the Constitution. You're absolutely right. Anything else, Richard?
Well, I just wanted to point out that, see, under common, I'll give a brief example.
Well, we're trying to get through the Constitution.
Oh, okay, I'll call another day, Doctor.
Okay, fine. Tragically, many of our courts, administrative courts, they are not constitutional courts. We need to get back to the Constitution, and Bill's point is well taken. Richard's point is well taken, that they are getting away from this. A lot of our judges really don't understand the Constitution. They don't understand our system of law. They've been indoctrinated in law schools, just as I was indoctrinated going to the University of California. Minored in history, learned nothing about American history. It was all what the socialists who control the educational system wanted me to learn. That's why, if you're out there in the listening audience, it's so important you get back to the fundamentals, understand what it's all about, and what our Constitution said, or we shall surely lose it. Would you agree with that, David?
That's right, because if we can educate enough Americans, an army of Americans, we can force the changes that need to take place to return us to a constitutional republic and return us to common law in our courts. But it's going to take an army of people understanding these principles and rising up and overthrowing the oppressors who are currently in power.
And we do it with education. We don't
That's
do
right.
it with guns or with weapons.
Mm-hmm.
We do it with education, people who really care about their freedom, about their future, about their family.
Well, the limit on funding for the Army was 2 years. In other words, no war could be conducted except that the Congress came back after 2 years and decided to continue to fund it. So there was never to be a standing army. And we know what happens if a standing army is standing. It won't be long before it's going to war. But they did provide for maintaining a navy. This is the 13th power. In other words, a more permanent force, because you couldn't build a ship overnight. You needed to, you know, have ships and shipyards, and the navy would be a more permanent force. But no standing army was part of their design.
And let me just point out, today America has troops stationed in 140 nations throughout the world. 140 nations. Why are we having troops stationed in 140 nations? Because we have people in our government who believe in an American empire.
Yeah.
The average American doesn't want this. We've never voted on this. But we have people who really want to control the world and create a new world order and a new world religion. By limiting the power of the Defense Department, people say, oh, you're unpatriotic. You want to take away their money. No, they are trying to take away our freedom. And what we need to do is get back to the concept we only have an army to defend America, not to dominate the world.
That's
Would that
right.
be a fair statement?
That is, because the plan for a two-year limitation on funding would mean that most of all the expeditionary things, the empire building that's going on today, would never happen, because the people would have a say about it before one soldier went off to war in some foreign land. Today, with the way it's working, Congress has no declaration of war. The president just decides willy-nilly whatever he wants to do, and it's carried out.
Now let me just comment. It's only a matter of time before we go to war with Iran. You can see how they're building up the American people in preparation for that. The terrible Iranians, they are threatening to attack Israel. They're developing a long-range missile so they can attack America. And, of course, the Syrians, too. We're going to war with them. We know this is their plan. We can talk about that some other time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only because we have these massive expenditures on defense. But it's not using for defense. It's being used for preemptive wars, not for protection of America, but for domination, for other purposes, to replace the governments there with governments that will not want national sovereignty, but are willing to sacrifice that sovereignty to this universalist dream, which is embraced by our leaders of the New World Order. the New World Religion. Go ahead, David.
And the people would say, well, wait a minute, if we don't have a standing army, then how can we possibly defend ourselves if some other nation attacks us? Well, the answer is that there is a militia. That is, every able-bodied man who was not a criminal, every able-bodied man was to have his own arms, he was to have military weapons himself in his own home, and when needed, he would be called up in the state militia. Now, when needed, then the state militia was called up by the federal government into federal service, and when they were in federal service, of course, they were under rulership of the chief executive, the president. But until they were called to federal service, they were under the governor of the state, and they were a local militia to protect that particular state if that state was invaded. And the Congress, again, was charged with establishing rules for military discipline, what's called the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And so that is the extent of their power militarily. Shifting from the military, the Section 8 also speaks about what control the federal government was to have over property. And it's very limited, and people don't know this today, and this violation is nationwide now. They were to control the property of the District of Columbia. That was the square area that was ceded from Maryland to the federal government. In addition to the District of Columbia, it was only to be forts and magazines and necessary docks and so forth for the Navy. In other words, anything that was military in terms of property, the federal government was to be in control of.
And now they control almost half the property in the western half of the United States.
It's completely unconstitutional. All the federal parks, all the national forests, all of those are completely unconstitutional, and they should have nothing to do with that. That should be under the state's control, not the federal control. And I know out west, you know it there in California, and I've talked to people in Utah and Nevada and Colorado and Wyoming. They're very upset because the federal government is acting like a tyrant in terms of the control of federal lands. Agreements that have been there for years of grazing rights and so on are being violated by the federal government today because they say, well, this land is the federal government's land. And we say, no. Constitutionally, the federal government does not control any of that land. It belongs to the states and to the people, not the federal government. Then the 18th power granted in Article 1, Section 8, is that Congress may do what may be necessary and proper to carry out the foregoing powers and other powers granted to Congress. This has often been called the elastic clause because it seems to provide to expand federal power. However, it is not an elastic clause if you understand what our Founding Fathers intended. They intended to say only those things specified in these powers listed here, these 17 powers of Congress, they can only do what is proper and necessary. Unfortunately, in a Supreme Court decision, McCulloch v. Maryland, 1819, so very early on, necessary was redefined to mean reasonably suited, not absolutely indispensable. And again, that's not the intention of our Founding Fathers. The Supreme Court was violating that intention. The other term in that clause, proper, this decision in 1819 decided that proper means what's not forbidden by other provisions of the Constitution. In other words, what the Supreme Court did there is open the door to an ever-expanding power of the federal government that was never intended by our Founding Fathers.
And you go back and you read what Jefferson wrote about that time, and he said, you know, I see within the federal judiciary the seeds of the destruction of our form of government for working as a thief by night, taking a little here and a little there, until eventually all power shall be centralized in Washington, and we shall have a government as venal as that from which we recently separated ourselves. And he understood exactly what was going on at that time, and he spoke out against it, but it's so easy just to say, well, we'll go along and get along, and this is not going to affect me. But eventually it does, because even then there were people. What people don't understand is that even long before our country was established as a constitutional republic, there were people here who wanted an all-power authoritarian society, and that's covered in my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. But pick the story up there, David.
Then moving to Section 9, Section 9 lists the limitations, eight specific limitations on congressional authority. They could not forbid slave trade before the year 1808. They could not suspend the writ of habeas corpus, that is, writ demanding that government give either a legitimate reason for holding a person or let them go. In other words, the government just can't arrest you, throw you in prison, and not charge you with some crime and not put you on trial. And this writ of habeas corpus was suspended by President Lincoln. Many people don't know that he was one of the worst tyrants that we have seen on our soil. He arrested the entire legislature, well, not the entire, but most of the legislature of the state of Maryland, because many of them were breathing the idea of secession. And before they could meet to vote on secession, he imprisoned them in Fort McHenry, and many of them remained in prison for a long time without ever being charged of any crime and without ever being put on trial. Well, the Constitution says you cannot do that. That's illegal. That's law-breaking, and he was a lawbreaker of the worst sort.
In fact, people don't know, as we look to see the coming draft here that they're planning on invoking after the elections, but under the Lincoln administration, there were over 2,000 people killed in the draft riots because the Northerners didn't want to fight in the Civil War. It was only a very, very small number of people who wanted. And in fact, after the draft riots, and it became so obvious that they had to have a cause, that's when they passed the Emancipation Proclamation. The Civil War had nothing to do with slavery, contrary to everything you've been taught, but the Emancipation Proclamation wasn't passed until, what was it, 62 or 63?
Right, towards the end, when he knew politically he needed to be sure that the European nations stayed off supporting the South, and so he was playing a political game because the Emancipation Proclamation actually freed no one.
Yeah, and in fact, it freed only the slaves in the South. It left the slaves in the North, who they could have freed, still enslaved.
Yeah.
It freed the slaves in the South that they had no power to. So it was used as a gimmick to justify this slaughter, this terrible slaughter that occurred in the Civil War that was totally manipulated.
Another limitation on congressional authority, Congress cannot act to find guilt. They cannot act like a court, and they cannot pass what's called ex post facto law. That is a law that is dated backwards, so that you'd be punishing a person for an act that, when they committed the act, was legal, and you make it illegal and then punish them for having committed it, those sort of things. And direct taxes, and here again, we've mentioned this already, direct taxes must be in proportion to the census and must not be directly upon the person. The federal government is unconstitutional when it directly taxes the individual. They were to send the tax bill to the state and not the individual.
And of course, there have always been people who wanted the progressive income tax, because that was point two of the Communist Manifesto published in 1848. But our founding fathers prohibited that. That's why they had to get through the 16th Amendment. And if you ever read The Law That Never Was by Bill Benson, you'll realize that the 16th Amendment was never ratified. But because of the corruption in Washington, D.C., both the 16th and 17th Amendments were certified, even though never passed. They become part of our way of life. You must understand that these are foundational to moving from freedom towards a fascist society. So we've got to get back to an understanding of why the founders of this country did not want a direct tax on the individual.
And in addition to that, there's no money that Congress could draw from the Treasury except by appropriation, and there had to be regular public accounting, and we know these days with smoke and mirrors, you never know what the accounting system is, and the lies that are told, like there's a trust fund for Social Security when there's absolutely nothing in the, you know, all these things are going on, again, in violation of the limitations that were placed by our founding fathers on congressional authority.
In fact, they've lost billions of dollars over in Iraq, and nobody has any idea where the billions have gone. And of course, you know, who's accountable? Well, nobody's accountable. You limit the power of government, they won't be able, of course, to have the thieves steal our money.
That's right. Well, Section 10 actually places limitations on the individual states' authority. The states could not enter treaties or alliances. They could not issue their own money except anything else than what the federal government had established as payment of debts. They also could not pass any ex post facto laws or impair obligations of contract. And they could not grant titles of nobility, and just as the Congress was not to grant titles of nobility.
David, we're going to lose our stations in just a moment or two. I want you to get your address and your telephone number out so people will know how to get in touch with the Institute of the Constitution.
Our toll-free number is 1-866-7-9-7. 1-866-730-9796. That's 1-866-730-9796. Or people, if they want to order a host kit on the web, they can go to our website, iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com.
And of course, once you have a host kit, well, you can set up a program in your own home. Everything is there that you need, the videos, the book that tells you how to organize it, because how to put the program on, the questions asked, the answers to the questions. It's really all there, isn't it?
It is. It's very easy to do, and we have great responses coming in as people are conducting this class and teaching their fellow Americans the truth about our country.
You hang on there for just a minute, David. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and with us this evening is Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. We've really gone through the Constitution and Article 1 of the Constitution. Next month we'll be doing Article 2, and perhaps the month after that, Article 3, or really however David wants to do this. We're actually taking you through the substance of the course, but of course you'll see videos, you'll have questions, and you'll begin to learn this, you'll become familiar with it, and you'll be able to discuss this intelligently, because if you don't know the foundation of your freedom, then who's going to? If you don't get informed now, when will you, when we've lost our freedom? Well, David, you're really, of course, putting these programs on all across America,
right,
aren't you, today?
And we are very encouraged by the response. I've talked to a number of people who, having taken the course one time, were just inspired to say, I've got to take this. I've talked to a gal who today who took it to her church, and she said, I want to put this church on as in my church as a gift to our church, because I learned so much about the Christian foundation and the Christian heritage of our nation, and I came away with an astonishing understanding of the Constitution. She said what motivated her most of all was a statement I made at the end of the class from which she graduated, was this: that you now know more about our United States Constitution than 90-plus percent of the people in Washington, D.C. who are leading our nation. And she said that scared her to realize that this ignorance is widespread, so widespread that the leaders of our nation don't know, or if they do know, they're living in violation daily of what the Constitution really says they're to be doing. So she was motivated to start a class, and she found it very workable. I mean, having gone through the class once, she found it very easy to take the materials and host a class for another group. Here in Maryland, for example, this fall we have 7 classes starting up in our small state, and we know that there's states across the nation. In North Carolina, there's a bunch of classes starting up, and out west in Washington and California, all over the nation, this is gaining in momentum, and it's very encouraging, Dr. Stan, because I know that we need an army, millions of Americans who understand this and then demand that their elected officials either follow the Constitution or get out of the job and get off the stump, so that someone who will follow the Constitution can be put in place, and then we can begin to rectify all the problems that this unconstitutional government has created in our day.
And, of course, the thing is that the enemies of freedom fear an informed and educated public. And that's why we do what we do, and why David is with us every month on every one of our programs, educating people and bringing you that understanding, and hopefully that you'll set up an Institute of the Constitution in your home, your church, your neighborhood. Thanks so very much for being with us, David.
Oh, God bless
you,
Dr. Stan. Thank you for the great work that you're doing.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening has been David Whitney, Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. And if you'd like to set up an institute in your community, in your home, in your church,
in your neighborhood,
why don't you call them at 866-730 9796. That 866-730-9796. They're having new programs just started, I think, a week or two ago up in the Spokane area. And if you'd like, of course, to get in touch with the people there, give us a call of 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And we'll get your name and put you in touch with the people who are started another class. They've had a number of classes up in Spokane. But we want to get as good a turnout as we possibly can for them. So if you'd like to go, it's every Thursday evening. Give us a call of 1-800-544-8927, and we'll put you in touch with the people who are starting a class there. Well, this is the time we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. And at 5 hours a day, you can hear us on radio somewhere across America. 5 hours a day, you can hear us on Internet, actually on several different Internets. Then, of course, you can hear us 4 hours a day on shortwave. You can hear us 4 hours a day on the satellite, soon to be 5 hours a day. If you'd like to know more about our ministry, our website is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. We hope you'll go there and pull down our old newsletters and bind them and go through them and copy them and get them in other people's hands. We hope you'll listen to our archive programs. We hope you'll look at the various items that we carry, because that will help us as far as what we do. And, of course, we do hope that some of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you'd like to get a free copy of our latest newsletter, our August newsletter, which is just completed today, is going to tell you what's going to happen financially. It's going to tell you what Warren Buffett really believes. It's going to tell you what Alan Greenspan really believes. It's going to tell you what, of course, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts really believes. But, of course, you're not going to get this through regular channels. So if you'd like to get a free copy of our latest newsletter, why, you can go ahead and give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll get one off to you. If you'd like to get our video on the Iraq, the Untold Story, which tells you the truth about why we're in Iraq, not what you're getting from the controlled media, but the real reason why, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927. And there's an excellent syllabus you can get with that if you'd like. It has all sorts of documentation in it. Original materials I found in my research material you'll never see elsewhere. So that's the syllabus, Iraq, the Untold Story. And then, of course, we have our syllabus on sustainable development and our tape sets and videos on sustainable development and Agenda 21. We have, of course, our syllabus on the Millennium Summit, what happened at the year meeting in the year 2000 as they plan to establish their world dictatorship. And, of course, there's a video that comes with that, a Millennium Madness, a four-tape set on the Millennium Madness. And they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. I want to remind you, we are having a meeting here in the Monterey Bay area on the 6th of November. It's going to be an all-day meeting, start early in the morning and go through until afternoon. Lunch is going to be served, and we do hope you'll come and bring your friends from across America. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Let me tell you, Monterey is one of the most beautiful areas in the world. We're on the North Shore of Monterey Bay, but all sorts of great things to see, and the good hotel accommodations close at hand. If you need a place to stay, you let us know, and we'll send you a list of the accommodations locally. And we do hope you can come. You'll meet people from all over the country. Indeed, probably from all over the world, as in our last meetings. And, of course, understand there are lots of people out there who feel just as you do, that we're in real trouble. And, of course, we are working constantly to try to expand our outreach to educate people about the spiritual nature of our struggle. And so we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our listeners and ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection till tomorrow. May the Lord be with you.
spacious skies, for amber waves of rain, for purple mountains.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. Hopefully, our producer is going to get our special guest this evening, Michael Shaw, on the line. And, of course, Michael is a fascinating individual. Dale, would you please get Michael Shaw on the line for us? Michael lives here in Santa Cruz, and like so many people, he wanted to develop his own property, found that suddenly there were tremendous barriers being put in the way to develop his property, and for one reason or another, there were people within the local planning commission who wanted to make his life just as difficult as they possibly could. And so he eventually got onto some of the local committees here to find out what was going on. He was on the Agenda 21 committee. And, as the Agenda 21 committee, this was an organization that was put together to come together with a plan for the Monterey Bay area. And he got onto the committee, and he spent several years working on that. And, they came up with a report, and then it went to the Agenda 21 committee, and they totally ignored all the work that they'd done. Because, you see, there was a predetermined plan. And all the work that had been done by the people on these various committees was simply frosting to give the people an idea that they had some input on what was happening. Well, what eventually occurred was that as time went by, it became very obvious to Michael that there was some sort of an agenda going on behind the scenes. And so he began to study that and started out learning about sustainable development and about the Agenda 21 program. And then, of course, began to understand that there are people of great wealth who have been working for a long period of time to come up with a one world government under the control of a ruling elite. But even more than that, they do have a master plan that's called sustainable development. It really came out of the meeting at the Second Earth Summit in 1992. It was all determined ahead of time. All the people from all over the world came to the Second Earth Summit meeting in Rio de Janeiro, but they really didn't have anything to say about what was going to happen because it had all been determined by a group of the world's financial and economic leaders on this, the good ship Britannia, the yacht of the Prince of Wales, and of course it had been decided ahead of time. So then they had all their meetings, and then they came up with the Global Biodiversity Assessment, which became the essence of sustainable development. Well, then of course, how do you implement that? Why you do it? So it was something called Agenda 21. And of course, the whole idea was think globally but act locally. Get your people into key positions in every community and bring this new process to pass. And what this is the most incredible program ever seen, because it is to centralize all power with the government and strip the people of their property rights, their personal rights, eventually of their ability to have cars. Eventually, it will direct every aspect of society and put people into sustainable communities. And, well, hi, Michael. How are you doing tonight?
Well, Dan, I'm doing really well.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself and how you happened to find out about this incredible, incredible program that's going on that the average American has no idea about?
Well, you mentioned earlier that I had sat on the Agenda 21 Santa Cruz committees, and I did that back in the 70s. I had been on the Resource Conservation Board and had been interested in land management issues and the like, and took on some community activity, if you would, in respect to that. And I ended up on this Agenda 21 committee, and I had begun to see these facilitated outcomes being determined all along the line with various kind of council situations. And it happened there, too.
Hold that just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan back here, I guess, this evening is Michael Shaw. And Michael was telling us that he was working then within these various committees at this county level. And pick up the story there, Michael.
Well, and so I went to these Agenda 21 committees, and I sat on the biodiversity and the housing elements. They had these round tables for agriculture, and they weren't talking about free enterprise agriculture. They were talking about totally controlling how agriculture would operate. And they had education systems that were engaged in whole systems and values and responsibility and arts and media, and this whole idea of collectivized and directed student activities that were focused away from the family values that was coming to those children. And they had energy and housing and population growth, family planning, public health growth, public health seminars on how to basically socialize medicine and resources and recycling and social justice, so that they could have a law for everything, that righted every wrong they perceived or wanted to make up, and the transportation and jobs, and they had committees for everything. And when I finished with that, I said, this is baloney. I mean, this is just absolute scare tactics, ridiculous notions that would never be accepted by the public. And that was probably in 1996 or so, and by the year 2001, I started seeing councils pop up all over this county, watershed councils and fire safe councils, and all of them had the federal departments of the interior or agriculture or other federal agencies involved, with local government officials putting these partnerships together between state and federal governments. And I saw homeowner associations dropping the Robert's Rules of Orders and accepting facilitated consensus outcomes for how community issues should be evolved. And I saw action groups like the Pajaro Valley Action Group come into being, and with massive powers, unelected people with massive powers, utilizing government.
But the thing is that, Michael, the average person has no idea what's really going on. The average person doesn't understand that this is a coordinated effort and that the people work in concert. They're not individual citizens. They are people working in concert to take over control of local government and boards and non-governmental organizations. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, yes, but let's be specific about that. The way that happens is the federal government and or certain sustainable development focused foundations like the Packard Foundation or the Irvine Foundation in Southern California put all kinds of money at the laps of these, sometimes they're bureaucrats.
Hold that thought for just a moment. We've got to pick up our stations. Okay, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Michael Shaw, who is really the president or chairman, or he is the director of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz program, and he actually does a program here on the Radio Liberty Network every Wednesday evening, he or other people who work with him, so he's doing a great job. But he's discussing about, as he worked within these local government committees, local communities, he began seeing all these councils and springing up, all of them being funded by people, the Packard Foundation, and were some of these getting government funds as well?
Oh, absolutely. There's massive amounts of government funding involved in this, and state funding as well, because the sustainable development concept has taken over both the Democrat and the Republican parties. You know, we hear all this stuff about Swift boats as though that was an issue in the campaign, when in fact it ought to be the reconstitution of the American government that's being undertaken by both Democrats and Republicans. And it's called sustainable development. It's a very nebulous idea, especially for folks who've not been involved in political concepts that run and govern societies. And so America's really been let down through its educational process, because we no longer know the foundations for which that make our government work, and what the sustainable developers have been able to do is slide in with massive funding for reconstituting a government that works in accordance with what's really a Soviet system. And by that I mean that you have a system of councils that report to an apex. And I can point now, after, you know, we're very lucky in Santa Cruz, and so much of that's due to you, Dr. Stan. There's many people in this community who have dedicated their lives to providing real research to people like myself and others who can go out and talk about these issues that really tie together all the disparate elements of the sustainable development and make it very cohesive. You know, basically, it's about an idea to restructure American government. They call it the reinvention of government. That was Al Gore's term. And in the process of restructuring our government, we're going to end up with a new system of justice. And that's not a system of equal justice. That's not a system that treats us with respect for being human beings. It totally disregards our natural right to life, liberty, and property, or our unalienable rights that Jefferson wrote about. And it's also giving us a new system of economics, because what's really happening here is that free enterprise is being converted into license. Government-private partnerships is the way you're going to be able to do business in the future, and increasingly now and already, and that's what so many people see wrong with the multinational corporate involvement, is that many of these corporations have taken to partnering with governments in order to meet their own ends. So we've got government and business partnering together, and that's of course the fastest route to tyranny that ever has been known to man.
And of course, one of the things they do is they get their people onto the local business councils, the local chambers of commerce, and they convince these people that this is the way to go, this is the wave of the future, globalization is important, and of course local control is important, but they put their people in, and these people have a fascist mentality. What they're forming, we call them councils, what they really are is local Soviets, where all the power is in these people's hands, and they determine what you can do with your property. They can determine whether a business can come in, whether stores can come in. They can determine eventually whether you will not be allowed to live on your property or develop your property. They will be able to take away your water because they want to control water. They want to control every aspect of human endeavor. That's what it's really all about. And it's all laid out in their Global Biodiversity Assessment Master Plan, published in 1992 by Cambridge University Press, and you can get a summary of that in our Sustainable Development Syllabus, or certainly you can buy the whole 1,142-page document at your local bookstore, Global Biodiversity Assessment, published by Cambridge University Press. This is the Mein Kampf of the Sustainable Development Program, and of course the Agenda 21, which is a separate program. This is how you will implement the Global Biodiversity Assessment or Sustainable Development Program. You can actually go up on your internet and look up Agenda 21, but unless somebody tells you it's there, you're certainly never going to hear about it from the communicasters, from the newspapers. You're not going to learn about it in schools, because it's a secret they don't want the American people to know, that they intended to take away their freedom and their property, and perhaps even more.
Well, and what's disturbing about it is that it's both the Democrats and Republicans are doing this and doing it wholeheartedly. The good news is that all of America has got half the story right. They either know there's something wrong with George Bush, or they know there's something wrong with John Kerry. And as soon as they begin to understand, for those people who don't like Bush, that there's something wrong with Kerry, and those who don't like Kerry, that there's something wrong with Bush, because they're in on the same dang deal, we'll be making a lot of progress.
Well, of course, as long as the American people, really believe the Amos and Andy or Laurel and Hardy or Abbott and Costello program that's being put out here as we approach the November elections, until they understand it's all showbiz, it's all simply avoiding talking about what the real issues are, until they understand that freedom is at stake and they better get involved and informed, why we're going to continue down the same course.
Well, and that's right, and they basically know that it's as old as political theory itself. That if you can eliminate political boundaries, and if you can raid the treasury, you can gather up all things into yourself and exercise total control over all the people. And that's clearly what's been happening. And I think most people are becoming aware that our boundaries, our political boundaries, whether they're our county boundaries or our city boundaries or our national boundaries, are falling apart. Our political system is falling apart with unelected bureaucracies making decisions on water issues, on fire protection issues, on all kinds of ranges of housing issues, transportation issues, so that we're no longer looking to elected officials to make these decisions on our basis, on our behalf. The boundaries have fallen apart. And at the same time, the Treasury is being raided in order to implement these programs of sustainable development. You know, I work a lot in the so-called environmental movement, and while I don't know anybody who's not for clean air and clean water, what I've been able to do is through working on my own property, come to understand the dynamic with respect to what I call the establishment environmental movement, and it's simply a failure. It's a very expensive, very costly failure. And I could give some examples of that. CalFed, which is the California Water Project through the Central Valley, has spent $300 million a year for the last 8 years on restoring the salmon in the Central Valley. Now, after all that money, that's billions of dollars, nothing has worked. And I'll give one example of how they dispersed this money. They gave $600,000 to the Audubon Society to do a study on restoring fish. And what the taxpayer got from the Audubon Society was 3,000 pages of documentation. Now, in that documentation, there were no pictures and no evidence that anything had been done. There were no measurements, but there was a bill paid of $200 a page for that 3,000 pages. And now they're applying for more. You know, but it goes on. Those kinds of examples just continue. Caltrans has given $30 million a year in million-dollar increments with no result. This is, again, for 8 years. And they've been trying to come up with a stormwater pollution control, and they've, again, achieved nothing. So,
you know, I think what they're doing, Michael, really, there are solutions. You put in dams and reservoirs and pools and ponds, and you try to really provide the water throughout the course of the year. But if you waste this all on study after study after study after study, why, you can say, look at all we're doing, but they never do anything, and that's what it's all about. You want to give the people the idea, the impression that we're really doing a lot, but of course they're accomplishing absolutely nothing, and that's what they want, because if they can control the water, they can control the agriculture, they can control the property, they can control the populace, and they're creating artificial shortages, and they're trying to convince the American people we're running out of water, we've got to raise the price of water, we've got to change the toilets so they don't use so much water, we've got to change agricultural methods, but it's really all about control and creating the problem, and that's really the tragedy, and the American people can't see that they've intentionally created the crisis, and they did that here in Santa Cruz by blocking the Zayanti Dam 20 years ago. That doesn't mean anything to the people across the country, but it was a coordinated effort 20, 25 years ago to block what would have solved our water problems for generations to come, because they didn't want a solution, they wanted a problem.
Well, that's right, and the key, though, for people across the country who smell that something's wrong is to understand that what they're attempting to do is, through the payment of these environmental bribes, I'll call them, is to elicit people's support. Now, as soon as people are starting to get these grant monies, they automatically become grand supporters, like they are at the universities, of the sustainable development model. The universities get huge amounts of funding for academic programs that relate to this environmental facade that they can measure all quantities of water and water movement, and they can measure all quantities of everything and anything. And people get these tremendous grant dollars to make these studies that produce absolutely nothing of public benefit.
Well, of course, they have great big thick reports which nobody can possibly read 3,000 pages of. We're going to be back in just a moment with Michael Shaw from Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. If you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But the whole idea is create the problem, write a report, but don't ever do anything to solve it. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Michael Shaw from Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, and we're talking about how this whole scam is being run, and the American people don't understand that billions and billions of dollars are being wasted. Of course, the environmental movement is funded by the great tax-exempt foundations, by many of our great corporations who benefit from having the power of government used to destroy their competitors, and, of course, by government itself. And a lot of good people, I'm sure, involved in the environmental movement, without understanding that most of the science is simply junk science, that if you look at the global warming situation and greenhouse gases, what is the major greenhouse gas? It's not carbon dioxide. It's water. Water vapor make up something between 80% and 90% of greenhouse gases. Carbon dioxide makes up 1 or 2%. And, of course, the global warming we've had this last century occurred about a half a degree, and well, most of that before 1940, when, of course, the CO2 emissions really began to explode. And, of course, all the solutions that they've come up with, like the Kyoto Protocol, regulate only the United States, but not communist China, the biggest polluter in the world. So if we're really interested in stopping pollution and CO2 emissions, why aren't we doing anything about China? Well, of course, because it has nothing to do with CO2 emissions. It has to do with destruction of the energy infrastructure of the United States. And when you understand that, it all makes sense.
Well, and I'll take it another step, Stan. I think if we take this down to its political nutshell, it's all about how you make an assessment of what rights are. You know, in the United States, we were founded on the premise that our rights are natural to us and that they're unalienable. That is, they can't be taken away. The separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them are to have a life of our own. Whereas the United Nations, which is what's behind the Sustainable Development Program, says that your rights come under the Declaration of Human Rights, where an individual's primary duty is to the community. And so as we begin to expand that view, what happens is that under the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution that follows, we have rules that say Congress shall make no law respecting, and you can fill in the blank, there's the number up in there in the Declaration, in the Bill of Rights. But under the UN Charter, Article 29, Section 3, says that rights and freedoms may in no case be exercised contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations. Now, what that means is that a group of elite people behind the UN, we don't know who they are necessarily, are making your rights for you by decree. And as they make them by decree, they can take them away from you by decree. And so it's a complete opposite premise of that upon which the U.S. is founded and about which our government schools no longer teach our children. So the disturbing part is that while our rights are being stripped away from us and while the American experience is being taken away from our posterity, that our children themselves are being educated in a school system that is teaching them global governance values, that is, that our rights ought to be determined by someone more powerful and presumed to be more knowledgeable than us.
You're speaking of someone in government, of course.
Pardon?
You're speaking of someone in government determining those rights.
That's right.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Michael Shaw from Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But the thing we want to bring out is there is a master plan. It is being implemented. They have their agents planted in literally every community across America. They read the same books. They're following the same blueprint, which is Agenda 21. They understand what's going on, and the tragedy is the average American doesn't. because there is a cooperation by the mass media and by the local newspapers and by the educational system and certainly by people at every level of government to keep the American people from understanding that this is all about taking away freedom. It is about doing away with our constitutional system of limited government and creating a government that will regulate every aspect of human endeavor. There is a master plan. They know what they're doing, and they're focusing our attention on what's going on in Iraq. And as our boys are supposedly over there fighting for our freedom, we are losing our freedom here at home. So pick up the story, Michael.
Well, it's interesting how they bring that down to the local level, how they really implement it. And one of the things that is clear that they try to do is that they try to create consternation and a battle. But the battle is always falsely put to you. They'll give you a choice, for instance, between government control of your water, as in our county, the San Lorenzo Water District, which has had something of a nefarious past with its land transactions, controlling an expanding area of the community, or having an international water company own that small community's water, in this case the little town of Felton. And so what we get is a choice between the left wing or the right wing, both of which are working to the same end, which is the consolidation of power into the Agenda 21 program. So these false battles are created. There's another one going out on the southern end of our county, where the farmers are having their water stripped away from them through a illegal taxing program. And in order to divert the farmers' attention away from that issue, the county is proposing to put a dump out in the middle of these beautiful farmlands. Of course, the county is proposing to put a dump everywhere right now where they're trying to slide in some other issues. So out with the farmers with a proposed dump, a community plan is being established that would control what kind of crops they grow and what kind of driveways the residential people in that community would have and whether or not they can have, what color their houses can be. It details everything. And this is a community plan that grows out of a council that is suddenly established, sort of a new layer of government. And it's just a slide right through in the county planning process without notice from people. Now, these are plans that are engineered and written by federal government employees who happen to live in the area and who are managed by those folks. So what we've got are some very hardcore political operative types who set up dynamics, create public dialogue that is off focus. The real focus is on the water and the community plan. They make the loud focus to be on this phony issue of a dump site so that it confuses people while they continue to move in their water policies and their community plan policies. And when those are completed, the landowners out in that nice area, which is now backing up to a UN preserve, they call it a gateway community to this UN preserve, will have their property increasingly regulated and taken away from them.
And, of course, here where we live, over the south part of our county, one of the great producers of many of the fruits, many of the vegetables, and the lettuce and other products of this sort, used all throughout the entire country. Artichokes, most of them, come from the area where we live. But, of course, you cut off the water, you cut off the agriculture. And this is really what it's all about. Or you run the price up so high that there's just no way that our farmers can compete with the farmers elsewhere. And that's really what they want. They really want, down the line, to produce food shortages. It's all there in their plan, the Global Biodiversity Assessment. You say that's crazy talk. Who would ever want to have food shortages? And I'd say people who look at the world entirely different than you and I do. But you need to check out the facts and find out if it's really true. And it's certainly outlined in our Sustainable Development Syllabus with the pages you can go to in their documentation to find out if this is really a master plan, that there really are people who look at the world differently than you and I. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Michael Shaw, who's the chairman. Are you the chairman or the president, or what are you?
I'm the president.
All right, fine.
And the president of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. And, you know, and while you bring that up, Stan, I'm gonna pitch some of the latest materials we have.
You go right ahead.
We have, I participated in the development of a six-hour DVD called America's Choice, Liberty or Sustainable Development. And this is an outstanding guide for those who want to educate themselves and members of their community about how sustainable development is coming into your community. The speakers include Tom DeWeese and Michael Chapman on education from Minnesota, and Beverly Ekman on the group manipulation tactics that are used by sustainable developers. And Michael Chapman, who is outstanding in the area of the Wildlands Project and Smart Growth. And with this DVD that you can order at our online news publication called AdvancedBulletin.net, that's www.advancedbulletin.net, you can order this video, and it brings some pretty clear understanding of the dynamic of sustainable development. The other thing that we're about ready to release is something called the Understanding Sustainable Development, or Agenda 21, a guide for public officials. And it's not just for public officials. It'll help you and your friends and neighbors a lot in understanding the dynamic. It's a simple to read document, about 12 pages long. And our plan is that every public official in the United States needs to get a copy of this document so that they can be held accountable and become understanding of the dynamic of sustainable development and how it really is going to leave not just the American posterity, but all of human posterity in a lurch, because without the ideals of individual liberty and equal justice, the natural rights or unalienable rights that we do in fact have as human beings, human beings being in sad shape here in the next generation or so. So it's something that a duty that we really owe our children as well as ourselves to become understanding of and get involved in and take some steps.
Now, Michael, are you on a regular hardline telephone, because we're having a little difficulty? Regular hardline telephone?
Is that better?
Yes, that's much better.
Okay, I apologize.
Okay, fine. Well, our guest is Michael Shaw, and, of course, we'll be back here in just a moment to continue with our program, and we'll... Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Michael Shaw, and, of course, we've been talking about this plan, this master plan, which most people have never heard of, because they don't want you to hear about it. They don't want you to understand this is a concerted drive, not only throughout the United States, in every municipality and every county, but all throughout the world. And you say, how could anybody coordinate anything like that? Well, they have an awful lot of people who support them. Other people, the old-line communists, Marxists, socialists, people who believe that we should have a ruling elite to control the folks. A lot of them are good environmentalists who don't understand what it's really all about. They just think if we had enough laws, we'd have a better society, because they put their confidence in government rather than in God. Now, Michael was saying that they have a great video. It's a six-part video, and I've seen parts of this. In fact, I've seen talks by all of the people who are there, and, of course, this is Michael Chapman and Beverly Ekman and Michael Chapman. Michael Kaufman, Michael Shaw, Tom DeWeese, Henry Lamb. A great DVD. And could you give that address again where people can get that six-hour DVD? Because here in 6 hours, you'll learn just about everything you need to know about that subject.
It's at www.advancedbulletin.net. And that's the online publication for Freedom21SantaCruz.net.
Okay, that's the Santa Cruz. Pardon me. Give the time one minute.
AdvancedBulletin.net. www.advancedbulletin.net. Dot net.
All right, fine. And they can get that through your organization. Let me suggest it'd be an excellent thing to have. And you'll learn so much by watching this DVD and getting the information and then putting it to good use.
That's right. And also you can sign up for about every month or so we put out news stories, some of which show you the operations of sustainable development, oftentimes with a Santa Cruz perspective, but we've taken stories from Maine and South Carolina and Texas and Washington and Wisconsin and all over the country where the same things are happening. They're happening everywhere. And so you'll learn a lot about the latest comings of sustainable development and how it's being exposed. And that's really the good news. The good news is that more and more people are figuring it out, and people increasingly aren't as afraid to talk about this. You know, it used to be in Santa Cruz when we'd go to these meetings and we'd start to bring up the Agenda 21 relationship. The implementers would roll their eyes and try to scoff at you. They don't do that anymore because they know we got their number, and they really don't want to be caught holding the bag. So there's all kinds of things you can do at the local level to break down this global local movement, and that's what this video and that's what your affiliation with Freedom 21 Santa Cruz ought to help you with.
Well, I think people across America should realize that the place where I live and where Michael lives, Santa Cruz is really on the cutting edge of this whole program because there are so many people. They've taken over our city council. They've taken over our board of governors. Pardon me, our county board of supervisors. And this has happened, maybe 30 years ago because of the influence of the university here. And, of course, they use the university students as their cannon fodder to go out and vote. All these independent things. University students, they all vote exactly the same way, and that's they vote for the Marxist within the city council and within the board of supervisors, and some of the people are openly and avowed Marxists. In fact, in Santa Cruz, we have Bettina Aptheker, whose father, Herbert Aptheker, was on the Central Committee of the Communist Party, and I believe Bettina was at one time, too. We also have Angela Davis, who was on the Central Committee of the Communist Party. They're sort of conservatives on our university campus there. They are professors up there. They've got some real liberals up there compared with Angela and Bettina Aptheker, so you can see how far to the left we are. But this is an experimental proving ground. This is what it's all about. They know exactly what they're doing. They've even written how this was going to be there, where they were going to experiment. And one of the things, although this would not affect people across America, but it just goes to show you how dishonest these people are. There's a 7-mile strip of railway track between Capitola and Aptos that they want to spend millions and millions and millions of dollars to buy for a 7-mile railway. Now, most people would use their cars to go the 7 miles, but they're going to set this up. It's going to cost, I don't know, $6, $8, $10 to take this trip for 9 miles. But nobody can quite figure out why they want to put in this railway. And, you know, this is discussed. I've seen it written up a dozen times in the local newspaper about this local railway, but nobody will tell the people of my community what this is really all about. Michael understands it. Michael, can you explain to our listeners what this railway is really about, what this secret agenda is behind that they've concealed from the people here?
Well, the first thing for the listeners across the country to understand is that we in Santa Cruz are not paying for this. This is being paid for by American taxpayers coming through Congress and coming through the state of California. Both the Bush administration and the Schwarzenegger administration are the most proficient sustainable developers I have ever seen. So to those who think this is a left-wing movement, there is a merger of left-wing and right-wing collectivists when it comes to sustainable development. You see, the sustainable developers generally in this county are run by business interests. And the environmental movement has become the pawns for focusing and concentrating the business power into a small and ever shrinking minority of people. So what goes on is that what the sustainable developers want to do to meet their smart growth needs is to bring people out of the mountains down into these densified, packed community centers where government housing units will be built along a rail center. So we have this dilapidated one-way rail line that will cost Nobody will estimate, but I'll guess up to $1 billion for a sparsely populated rural county along the coast of Santa Cruz, along the coast of California.
Now, is that $1 billion going to be the whole length of the county, or just that 7 miles?
The whole length of the county. The 7 miles is the camel's nose under the tent. The real goal is to go from Pacific Grove in Monterey County to Davenport in Santa Cruz County. So it's the Monterey Bay. It's Congressman Sam Farr's territory. Now, Sam Farr flies the UN flag outside his congressional office, but don't think that doesn't mean that he's not powerful. He's extremely powerful. In fact, the first 3,700 units of government housing along the beach in California that is now being approved.
3,700 units along the beach. The average person here doesn't understand what's going on, because these people have got their power by saying we're against growth, but they're really going to be pushing the first 3,700? Well, how many are they talking about, really?
They have for this county, have authorized 10,000 government-controlled units along the railroad track that is to be redeveloped. Now, the federal government and the state government have put up $300 million to build these tiny crackerjack units. That's $80,000 a piece of subsidy to the private developers. Now, some of them are nonprofits, and some of them are buddy developers. But what's happening is that the insiders are going to have their guaranteed profits, while the taxpayer foots the bill to create a bunch of dependent housing along the coast of Santa Cruz. Now, Sam Farr says this is just the beginning. What we can do in Santa Cruz, we'll do across the country. And your tax dollars, America, are going forward on this, because this is one of the models for sustainable development around the country.
Now, how are they going to get the people out of their homes up in the mountains, though? Because a lot of the people are rugged individualists. They don't want to live in these little crackerjack boxes, these sustainable units. And, of course, they want the rail line there because they want to get them out of their cars. So how are you going to get the people out of the mountains?
Well, there's a lot of ways, but the easiest way is to prevent all land management activities of the mountains. That's pretty well been done. And it's even going to get worse, because Santa Cruz just recently adopted the International Fire Code, which ties into Federal Department of Interior land management requirements that end up keeping you from thinning your forest and from making your forest healthy, from doing the kinds of things that keep the fire fuels low.
And so basically they'll burn better. This is what they really want, then, to be able to burn out the homes?
Well, you know, for most of the people working in the sustainable development movement, they wouldn't have such an evil, devious motive. But down at the corners of this, what really drives it? When I was on the RCD board, the federales would come out and preach to us. And there's a lot of talk now about the let-it-burn policy for our forests. I can tell you that 10 years ago, it was a make-it-burn policy. The idea was that the forest needed to burn and in order to release certain seeds and that sort of thing. And so what they've done is built up this huge fire fuel that comes across with catastrophic fires in San Diego and Los Angeles and all through this state and out across the West. And we're all paying the price.
And the thing is that it's very difficult for people to understand that there really are people who want to let it burn. We're going to be doing a program, I think, tomorrow afternoon with a woman who talks about this massive fire that they had down in Southern California about 3 months ago. And the United States government was willing to send in a whole fleet of helicopters with buckets on it to help put out the fires, and the local authorities, for 5 days, as hundreds of thousands of acres of land were burning, refused to take any help at all, and they let it burn, and they burned out 3,000 homes.
Well, what happens is that you adopt what's called the Urban Interface Wildland Zone Fire Code, which is the United Nations International Fire Code, and it puts limitations on your local firefighters. They now have to put, in many cases, the environment ahead of property, even the environment ahead of human life, the circumstances, right? Several years ago, there was a fire up in the state of Washington, and the firefighters couldn't pull water out of the creek because of fear for the endangerment of a fish. And so firefighters lost their lives because the fire wasn't able to douse it with the water that the firefighters were expecting. So these have dramatic effects. Santa Cruz adopted this ordinance about 2 months ago. So did Lake Tahoe, the same ordinance. But of course, the policies have been in effect anyway. So that the fire fuel in the Santa Cruz Mountains is really high. If I was one of the firemen fighting for these fire departments, I'd want to know of my bosses why it is that they're adopting ordinances like this that don't call for the straightforward management of forests and management of fire risks.
But of course, you see, they can't let the American people know what the real agenda is. Well, let's go to Jeannie who's calling. Hi, Jeannie, how are you doing?
Well, I'm just fine, Dr. Stan. I was going to ask Michael, as I understand, the Santa Cruz Mountains are actually in the Ventana Wildlands Project. And is this probably the foremost reason why they want the people out of the mountains?
Well, you know, I don't know. Nacine Marks is a UN protected zone that became such formally this year, very quietly, never appeared on a local newspaper. They don't let people know things like that. You know, clearly the Wildlands Project has this whole region from Santa Cruz Mountains down into the Big Sur area as wilderness and off limits to human beings. So, you know, it happens here, however it happens here, it happens in Maine, however it happens in Maine, it happens in Florida. The net result is always the same, and it's to force people off their land.
Looking at history regarding the Santa Cruz Mountains, in the Wildlands Project, they always look at the animals that were here before historically, and that is the black bear and the grizzlies, the mountain lions, the elk and the deer. Of course, they are needed for food
for the mountain lions, right?
Yes, exactly. And so
they need an occasional human being as well.
Well, true. If they take the guns away from us, then how do we go out into the mountains? Because we'll be scared to death. So I really feel, because of the Wildlands Projects, up in the Santa Cruz Mountains, they would like the people out of the mountains, and they will have a Wildlands Corridor only for animals. So this has to be looked at also.
But the thing is, they're really not interested in the animals, Jeannie, because the fire destroys the habitat and destroys so many of the animals. So it's really all about power. It's about a dream. It's about a different vision of the world. And we might think these people are crazy, but they know exactly what they're doing.
And it's control, because if they have these dense villages along the railroad lines, then they can control us very, very easily.
And I really think that's exactly what it's all about. It's really all about control. It's about fascism. Call it fascism, red fascism, doesn't matter what you call it. These people have a different world vision. They want to control our lives.
Thanks for the program.
Thank you so much, Jeannie. Our telephone again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest this evening, Michael Shaw, who is the president of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. And for our listeners out across America, you must understand what happens in Santa Cruz is prologue to what's going to happen in your community, because we are acknowledged by environmentalists all throughout the country as the place where they try all of these incredible, a foolish, dangerous, and I believe sinister programs.
Well, and certainly one of the consequences of that is it drives your housing prices way up. Just like medical costs have been driven way up, it's easy to destroy. It's easy to destroy free markets. We've let it happen to us, and now they're going to use the fact that they've destroyed the marketplaces as the excuse to take even more and ultimately total control.
Well, you know, one of the things that really bothers me, Michael, is these environmentalists, these left-wingers, the socialists who control our city council and our board of supervisors have sold their ideas to a lot of the people in this community who don't understand the importance of private property rights but do like the quaint nature of our society and our community because it's a beautiful place to live, but they've sold it under the guise of control population growth. We can't have unbridled growth. We don't want Santa Cruz to change. And a lot of people have voted for them without realizing, of course, that they're voting to take away other people's property rights. But now, with the 10,000 new units that are planned to come in here, they're not telling anybody, but this is going to create total chaos because they blocked the development of roads. How are people going to get around if it's already bumper to bumper on our highways now because for 30 years they blocked the development of the proper highways? What happens? Ever going to be riding that train?
Well, what they're doing, Stan, is they're building the infrastructure for a post-private property society. It's going to become very easy for them to take down the standards of America once they get their little soup lines built down along the railroad track, and that's what they're doing. They're raiding the treasury, they're breaking down our borders, they're creating a new system for us to get used to. You know, you're going to need a license someday here in Santa Cruz to be able to drive your car out on the freeway, and they're not going to give that to you unless you're a partner of theirs. Mm-hmm. You know, it's government control.
Will you hang on? And of course, our guest has been Michael Shaw. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening has been Michael Shaw. We've been talking about what's going on in our community, but out across America, understand that we are simply the prototype for what's going to happen in your community. You say that this could never happen in America. Yes, it could, because the leaders of both political parties are dedicated to the impoverishment of our people. That's why they support globalization and shipping our jobs, our industries, offshore, and destroying the value of our currency. Right here in Santa Cruz, you know, I drive down the street. We have one-way streets, we have, I should say, two-lane streets. But we've got big, wild bicycle paths on both sides. We could have double lanes in all of our streets. But they've given all those the bicycles. The trouble is there's nobody on bicycles now. But with all these bicycle paths and all of our streets across our community, I figure that they know something we don't like. Pretty soon, an awful lot of people are going to be riding bicycles because they're not going to let us have cars. Would that be something that you think they're planning?
Well, they certainly in the Agenda 21 documents talk about the mandated reduction of vehicular use and of fossil fuels. And so clearly that's the case. You don't pour enormous amounts of money into making a rail line. It makes no economic sense unless you're engaged in some sort of social manipulation, which is exactly what our transportation czar has been quoted as saying here in the discovery of some documents that she did 20 years ago, which is that transportation policy is not about science, she writes. It's about behavior modification.
Behavior modification like you do with animals.
Exactly. But, you know, Stan, it's not just Santa Cruz, it's California. You know, recently Governor Schwarzenegger announced that 21 individuals, that's an interesting number, 21 individuals were going to, quote, create the first 21st century government in the United States. Well, we've got 18th century governments that were designed to work for all times. And the 21st century government they're talking about is going to be designed by 21 people, appointed buddy-buddy by Schwarzenegger. They're going to take away our counties. That's the goal of the California Performance Review Standard, is to take away county government and establish regional government. Remember what I said about taking away your boundaries. You know, it's a political proverb that if you can take away a nation's boundaries, political boundaries, and you can raid the treasury, it's yours for the pickings, and that's just what they're doing.
Well, thank you so much. Our guest has been Michael Shaw, and we'll be talking to you tomorrow afternoon on the Genesis program. Thanks for being with us, Michael.
I'll look forward to that, Stan. Thank
Good you. Night. Bye-bye. And, of course, our guest has been Michael Shaw, the president of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. One of the crusaders is on the front lines of this battle, helping us try to awaken the American people. Well, this is Arthur Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And those of you who do not know what sustainable development is, go up on your internet, and of course you can find all sorts of information that you can get information on Agenda 21. But let me suggest that you may want to get our sustainable development syllabus. You may want to get our 4-tape set on sustainable development. Our two videos, one is Sustainable Development, The Road to World War III. The other is simply Sustainable Development. And they will give you the insight into the understanding of this truly diabolical program. It is a master program, and not only to control your property, but of course to eliminate a large percent of the people on the face of the earth, because population control is an important part of this whole diabolical program. And in our sustainable development syllabus, why we present my population control agenda monograph, we actually quote that great patriot Jacques Cousteau, who talked about in the interview in the UNESCO Courier in November of 1991 of the necessity of eliminating 350,000 people a day. That's 350,000 people a day. If you'd like to see that, the copy of the UNESCO Courier, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you a copy, those pages free. That's Jacques Cousteau quotation. We'll get it to you. And understand, it's all planned that way. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. Pull down my Population Control Agenda monograph. It's all up there, free for the taking, and it's the best thing out there, overlooking grossly what they're doing. One of these days we'll have to update it, because they're doing so many things to limit our population. They're blocking effective treatments for cancer. They're poisoning our children and our elderly with fluoride. They're poisoning us with mercury. They're poisoning us with aspartame. They're poisoning us with genetically modified foods. And, oh, you say these things can't be true. Well, you need to get the facts, ladies and gentlemen. You need to go up on your internet and start looking up these various websites. And, of course, we have all of this available through my ministry. If you'd like to get a free copy of our catalog, which covers many of these subjects, give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you a free copy of my latest newsletter, which tells you about the coming economic problems we're going to have in America, because we are going to have problems. And, of course, as those problems develop, who are we going to look to solve our problem? Why, the government. Oh, the government will have to solve the problem. The government has created the problem intentionally and maliciously, because there is a brotherhood of darkness working behind the scenes. These are secret groups and secret organizations. Now, I just challenge you to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and read it and study it, and then, of course, look at the references. And these are by people, very well accredited people, like James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress, Professor Quigley, professor at Georgetown University, but before that, professor at Harvard and at Princeton before he went to Georgetown, and his book Tragedy and Hope, which was suppressed for so many years because somebody came in and bought up a Macmillan company that had published Tragedy and Hope and destroyed the place to the first half of the book. And if you doubt that story, we have an interview with Professor Quigley, and you can get that with the Tragedy and Hope special, or by ordering our secret government a 4-tape set. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there is control over the media, there is control over publications, there is control over television. In fact, there are 5 or 6 major corporations that control over 95% of the communications media in America. And as a result, they effectively control what the American people think. So go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like, of course, to come to our November 6th meeting, we hope many of you from all across America will come. This is a wonderful place for a vacation, and the meeting will start early in the morning, go until evening. Lunch will be served. That's the annual Radio Liberty Conference here on the North Shore of Monterey Bay, one of the most beautiful spots in the world. And so we ask you to pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. Give us a call if you'd like to come to our meeting at 1-800-544-8927. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.